Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. Time now to look at some other stories from around the world, the kind of stories you probably don't hear as much about. Jonathan de Burka Butler joins us once again. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you doing?
Now, Hong Kong, we do know about the ferment going on in Hong Kong, but this is a story specifically to do with Apple and an app.
Yeah, so it's funny the different stories that obviously come out of these things and where you find contradictions, shall we say, in people where you mightn't expect them. So last Wednesday, Apple said that it had removed an app which is called the HK Map Live, okay, and it's taken it away from its Chinese app store. Now, it did this because it says that it violates our guidelines and it also violates local laws, and they said that they had had various different complaints from users and authorities and things like that. Now, there's people in the media, shall we say, and who would be advocates of free speech and the like, who said, no, you had pressure put on you by a Chinese-owned media company, state-owned media company called People's Daily, who had been publicly criticising the app, all right? And this is the reason. So, effectively, the Chinese government has put pressure on you, and this is the reason you've got rid of the app. So, they've come in for some criticism. Now, what it did, I should tell you what this app actually did, was that it effectively allowed protesters to locate, don't know how exactly, but it allowed them to locate pockets of police, right? So that they could go into areas and basically go, we'll attack this couple of shops and we know that we'll have time to get away, or we can sort of isolate these group of police and that's how it worked. So for that reason, I suppose it could be argued from Apple's point of view that it was allowing protesters to break the law. Because they were going in and messing up shops or whatever way you want to put it. But others would say that it's interfering with their right to protest. And that when it comes to Donald Trump and various other people, that, you know, Tim Cook would be quite right on in his criticism in that regard.
I suppose it'd be an interesting legal argument. I mean, if he used it and then broke a law subsequently by using it, but it doesn't necessarily mean the app itself is illegal. It depends what they do afterwards.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it stymies the efforts of the protesters.
It sure
that was
does.
The main point of it.
And the thing is, it comes off the back of another app that they stopped on September 30th, which was a news app. And they then said that there were stories on that news app that were carrying stories that were illegal in China. So it all boils down to the fact that they, you know, or some people say that it boils down to the fact that, you know, China's its third largest market. So Apple, unlike Facebook, Google, and an awful lot of these tech companies, actually does very, very well in China. It earns about $44 billion a year.
So indeed,
therein lies the quandary for them, I think.
Yes, that's an enormous market to just say no to. Though then again, you'd wonder, would China have, could China say, you know, shut out an Apple at this stage of the game? Would they be prepared to do that?
I don't know if it could, or would they be prepared to do it, but I think another part of it is that the Apple supply chain is also embedded
indeed,
in China as well. So that's another big part of it. Arguably, that's bigger, I would say.
Yes, indeed. That's where I showed that all the phones in the world come from there, pretty much. Right, Cameroon we're going to go to next. And the government has proposed special status for the Anglophone regions.
Yes, so this is the reason I'm covering this is because the story we've been looking at on and off for the last couple of years, ever since the Civil War started, really, in Cameroon about 3 years ago. So there's two regions of Cameroon that are English-speaking, okay, because they were formerly ruled by the British, and then they became part of Cameroon in the 1960s, which the majority of that country is French-speaking. Okay. And basically, these regions feel that they have been neglected for the last number of years. All right. And a few years ago, about 3 years ago, the president, Paul Biya, who's been there for more than 35 years, he basically said teachers and lawyers can't do their business anymore in English. They must do it in French. They went out, the teachers and lawyers went out on strike, and then, of course, that was taken over by more militant representatives, of Ambazonia, as this Anglophone region is called. So there have been peace talks, or at least there's been a national dialogue, okay? And it seems that Paul Biya is moving towards having cracked down on people in the region and sent quite a number of people to prison. It seems that he's moving towards a more conciliatory ground. So he's freed about 350 prisoners, and he's talking about giving them a special status. So it's an interesting move. It's promising, of course. The more militant wings of Ambazonia, that's the Anglophone regions, have said, no, you know, Paul Biya can't say anything on our behalf because he doesn't represent us, because we're an independent country. We declared it 2 years ago. But it would appear that there's some sort of movement.
Okay.
Which
so
is
it's
positive.
It's a positive. It's the moon in the move in the right direction.
Yeah.
Something a lot more depressing, and you've reported on this many times before, is various oppressive laws towards gay and lesbian people. And in Uganda, they're going to... Are they definitely going to do this, bring in the death penalty?
So this is what they're looking at. So you'll probably remember that they've done this, tried this a few times. So back in 2009, they wanted to bring in the death penalty. There was an international outcry, so they withdrew that law, or at least they toned it down. They brought it back in 2014. A similar bill that didn't include the death penalty, but included sort of life imprisonment for holding hands or cohabiting, this kind of thing. And that got through the parliament, but was thrown out of the constitutional court on a technicality. Okay. So now they've brought it back again. And this has been led by a man called Simon Likodo, who is the ethics and integrity minister, would you believe? Right. And he basically said, and it's worth quoting him just to give a, you know, his point of view. Homosexuality is not natural to Ugandans, but there has been a massive recruitment by gay people in schools, where they are promising the falsehood that people are born like that. So he basically feels that it's time to wipe out what they call unnatural sex, and basically for perpetrators of this unnatural sex, they will get the death penalty if this law passes, which he is very hopeful will get the two-thirds majority that's required in this case.
But even as things stand now, the sentences are completely draconian.
Oh, yeah. It's life imprisonment. But that comes from when the time the British were there, I think.
Yeah. Now, the... Why is he doing this? I mean, other than he's a complete raving homophobe, but is there any political gain from this? Are the public in Uganda clamoring for this kind of thing?
I don't know is the truth. I mean, they roll this out every couple of years, and it appears that and when it happens, violence against a homosexual goes up, of course.
Yes.
All right. So it's good to have a constant stream of scapegoats and, groups that you can, you know, deflect attention away from real issues.
Yeah.
So like Museveni is going through a bit of a problem in Uganda at the moment because he has real opposition for the first time. This young rock star, I can't remember his name now, who appears to be going up against him, but is doing very well and has been doing well for the last 2 or 3 years. So it's always worth deflecting. There's also money that's coming from certain parts of the United States that's going into Uganda and other countries around there to try and kill the gays, as this particular bill has been nicknamed.
Charming. Yeah. Right, Romania next we're going to. The government there has collapsed.
Yes, this is a vote of no confidence which has collapsed the government of Prime Minister Viorica Dancila. So she was only there for about for a few months actually. I think she was the third Prime Minister in 7 months. She wasn't there for very long at all. So they're going through a bit of a crisis there at the moment in Romania, and her particular party has lost out. Now, mainly because she did very badly in the European elections in May, and at the same time, the president of her party, which is the Social Democrats Party, man by the name of Liviu Dragnea, was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Okay, and he, since he started his political career, has been shrouded in accusations of corruption, and the stories about him are quite incredible. Mm-hmm. But he's finally been caught and put in jail 3.5 years.
Right. Okay. So, and is there any speculation as to if now the government's collapsed, would there be a change of government after the general election?
So the president has 10 days to invite other parties to create a government. There can't be an election because there's a presidential election next month, and there can't be within 6 months of a presidential election. There can't be
a general election called.
So they're in a bit of a limbo at the moment. So it's interesting to see there are other things going on in the European Union, domestic politics that other people have worries about and concerns about.
Right, Russia we're going to next, and it's some economists are proposing a homebrew index. What is that?
Yes, so this is Alexei Zubits. He's a researcher at Moscow's Financial University, and he's calling for a Samagon index. Now, Samagon apparently is the illegal homebrew that's the favourite in Russia. And his idea, his thesis is that if you track the consumption or lack thereof of this homemade alcohol, it will show you how the economy is doing. So he's basically saying that people will go and make this homemade brew when they're feeling impoverished. And he's done some research into it, and he said that this is shown to be true, and indications are that the Russian economy and people are doing well in the Russian economy at the moment and making lots of money because they're not making as much home brew.
That's interesting. It makes a lot of sense, actually, in a way.
There have been critics. Some people have pointed out that, you know, some people might... You know, it's becoming quite fashionable to make your own homebrew now. Dmitry Medvedev actually makes his own, apparently.
Does he?
Yes, which would be probably interesting to review on Movies and Booze.
Economists have used criteria before, like the price of a Big Mac in every country in the world, or the price of a cup of coffee.
Big Mac index,
apparently... price of a cup of coffee here, you can buy a house in many other countries for it. Right, Ecuador we're going to go to next. And members of the police have been released.
So there's been several days of protests going on in Ecuador. It's been the last 2 weeks, really. It's kind of an extraordinary story. There was a deal done between Ecuador and the IMF back in March, a loan of 4.2 billion, I think it was, which is when you consider that ours was what, 23 billion, and the population of Ecuador is 17 million people.
Yeah.
It's kind of a drop in the ocean. So you'd sort of wonder why the IMF were going in. The economy was doing fine. Protesters kind of copped on to this because there was various measures that needed to be brought in by the government, such as getting rid of fuel subsidies, protections for workers, various different changes that were being instigated by the IMF deal, all right, that were being brought in by Lenin Moreno, the new president of Ecuador, and were being, you know, sort of on the back of this deal. So they took to the streets when the fuel subsidies were taken away. And this led to protests, and they got pretty bad. I mean, 10 people have died, about 1,000 people have been arrested. And during the protests, 10 police officers were taken hostages. They were paraded on stage. They were made to carry a coffin, would you believe, of one of the protesters, as if to bring home the point that they were being too forceful against protesters. So they were eventually released. The protesters and the government came to the table, and it looks like now they've actually worked out a deal where the fuel subsidies have now been reinstated. So a very hairy situation has been avoided, or at least has been made better.
Right. Okay. And those protests worked, I suppose.
Yeah, it did in this case. Yeah, they did in this case.
Yeah, England we're going to finally, or particularly the University of Cambridge. What is the Stormzy effect?
So you know who Stormzy is?
Yeah.
Yes, good. It's good to see you're still down with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Like myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's a grime artist, and I don't know when he pledged this, maybe 2 years ago or that. He said he was going to fund tuition fees and living costs for two students each year to go to Cambridge, okay,
right.
Specifically from underrepresented communities, okay? And Cambridge have come out and said that the number of black students who were admitted to Cambridge this year was up from 61 to 91. So they said that's an increase of 50%, and they're saying that this is down to what's been called the Stormzy effect. So they're seeing an increase in interest in applications, okay, outreach programs, and just general interest from the black community in going to Cambridge. And so they're saying that it's down to this.
Yeah, I don't know. Would it be?
I don't know. It could be an opportunity that they're taking to, say, pat themselves on the back and show how wonderfully inclusive they are now, because 3% of new undergraduates are black.
Yeah. Put that way, it's not so exciting. Mm. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Okay, there's a lot going on. October the 17th, which is Thursday, elections in Gibraltar. Could be quite interesting in their own way. 8 years since Gaddafi was killed, would you believe, on Sunday. Bolivia, presidential elections in Bolivia. Evo is going for a fourth term, which he said he wasn't going to do. So that'll be interesting to see. But there is a bona fide possibility that he won't get in. Okay, so it's one to watch.
Yeah.
And then elections in Canada. We'll see if Justin has managed to escape the electorate.
Yes, will he be red-faced after his black-faced? Jonathan, thank you very much coming into us. Jonathan DeBrecke-Butler there. We'll take a break. Back in a sec.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.